There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Back at the Elder Dragon Turtle podcast. This is your host Igor, and as always with me, my co-host Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hi, Niksha. Hi.
And also we have somebody super special with us to talk about the lore and stuff in Ravnica. Say hi, Robert.
Hi. Yeah, I am super special.
So, who are you besides being super special?
Well, I'm a lot of things, but mostly I play ADH. That's what makes me special, I suppose, because I like land destruction. Mass land destruction, to be precise, and I don't play blue in ADH most of the time. That's also very special.
So he's a person of culture.
Yeah, not playing blue is
a sign of culture.
More killing lands is a sign of culture, but you know.
Look, I'm all about those Armageddons, and I'm all about those Winter Orbs.
Yeah, just my luck.
But how have the last couple of weeks been to you guys?
Busy, very, very busy. I took a short break over the summer from EDH and MTG in general. And just like 2 weeks ago, I met up with Niksha and a couple of friends, started playing EDH again, been enjoying it. Or just ordered a couple of cards. And well, I'm just having like loads of fun again.
Been playing any special commanders recently, or?
Usually, right now I'm playing like Edgar, but I'm like playing an aristocrats version instead of aggro. Joyra is like my only blue deck, but it's like typical like wannabe spiky looking. Yeah, I'm pretty good at magic storm deck, just trying to combo off with either Mind Desire or Aetherflux Reservoir. I'm currently trying to finish my, like, Silvala. I'm a group hug deck, but not really a group hug deck. And I have a Thrasios Timna deck I don't really enjoy playing, because it's, like, it's really good, but, like, even I don't enjoy, like, its win rate. It's just not fun.
It's too predictable.
You have, like, those usual win conditions, you know, Flash Hulk or Scepter combo or... obviously the only card that should be actually banned in EDH, Paradox Engine, which is like really too easy to achieve and assemble. And, Zada. I'm really enjoying Zada. It's like my favorite mono red commander. She's like so much fun. It's like a storm deck of sorts. You just like ramp up with a lot of rituals and just like fast and flames them back and then either kill someone with some sort of combo, or you just got humongous feats with dragon fathers, holding outbursts and like stupid stuff like brutal strength or titan strength, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And what about you, Niksha?
Well, I've been trying to make Gyrus work, and it's going little by little, and the dredge plan it kind of works. It works some of the time. It works when you manage to dredge Feast of Worms, and it works when you manage to not mill every way of reanimating your Izoni to make a bunch of insects. So what you do is you put in a lot of tokens. I didn't find any other win condition yet.
I played against your Gyrus, and you won. You did win. I was surprised.
So was I.
Yeah. I've seen the expression on your face. Like, I actually don't think Jairus is that good of a general. He's like the bottom tier of gen commanders.
He's like the 17th most, the 17th best gen commander.
Out of 18.
Yeah.
Because we still have the War Weaver. However, I do believe he might be good in that one single format called Tiny Leaders. Yeah. Laugh all you want. I know. It's like a forgotten format. But actually, there's like a tournament this weekend in one of my favorite pubs. And I'm looking forward to playing there, actually. Mostly because the first place is like a coupon for like free drinks all night. And I love the cocktails there. But mostly because I'll either be playing some kind of hate bear strategy with either Anapenza or Trastus Timna. Or I'll just be playing like Alesha good stuff without the land destruction part. Well, I might actually just play like Fulminator Mage and Molten Rain and Vindicate and Smallpox.
But you can't play Assassin's Trophy, now can you?
Well, that's the argument I would take for playing perhaps Abzan or like Thrasios Timna.
I mean, Anapenza is legal in Tiny Leaders.
Yeah, she is. Like, the only actually banned commanders are, well, Derevi for obvious reasons, because Derevi?
She's Rafalos, a fair commander.
Pardon?
She's a fair commander.
Yeah, she is a fair commander. I actually think she's really strong. She's just being a 4-4 for free in a format like filled with free drops. That's very powerful, actually. And she hates on all the combo decks. I actually saw what's his name? The Naya commander, Marith. Am I pronouncing it
right? Marath, of all the world.
Exactly. A combo deck built around him in Tiny Leader specifically. And it was like when the format was new, like a couple of years ago, even though no one's really played it.
Many years ago.
Many moons ago. Many blood moons ago. There was like a Marith deck that was like tearing up the scene. And it looked actually fun.
I remember Tiny Leaders being a thing for like a month or so and then gone.
Yeah, it was a strange period in Magic, like around the Khan's era, which had like a really popular standard. It was expensive though, but like popular. But like Tiny Leaders emerged and God in heaven, like Frontier emerged.
What's that?
It's a forgotten format that like Japanese store owners played and got really popular for like 2 weeks, and where people are saying it's basically super standard or budget modern, and everybody and their mother were playing it, but it was just like standard with a slightly larger card pool.
It was extended. Let's not kid ourselves. It was extended.
Yeah, it was.
An extended. Extended is basically a better version of modern.
Not really.
I remember extended. I used to play like 4-color Psychotog, and I loved the deck.
I mean, extended is, yeah. People just stopped playing it because it was very weird, but at this time of age, I don't think it's that weird, and they should actually bring it back.
Actually, there's a format that people are kind of starting to catch on, pre-modern. Did you hear about it? It's very popular in Scandinavia, but a lot of things I don't agree are popular in Scandinavia, so it's like every single card, well, it has its own ban list. I don't know the exact ban list by heart. But it's like all sets that are legal before 8th edition. So it's kind of awkward, but most like tier decks are just blue something standstill decks with stasis.
It sounds really awkward.
It's clunky for sure.
It sounds like people are trying to push something on me.
I mean, why not just play Pauper then?
Pauper is a great format. I actually really like Pauper. It's one of the best formats, in my opinion. Its popularity is slightly decreasing when I consider how popular it got like a year and a half ago.
Because of the whole GP thing for Channel 5?
Yeah. I mean, I used to like play Pauper way back when, like back in 2014-ish? 13-ish? But, because, how should I put it? The format is really good. It's basically budget legacy. I consider it to have a higher power level than modern does.
It does have brainstorm.
It does have every single cantrip. And it has like 4 turn 2 kill decks. It actually does have a higher power level than modern does. You can also play Tron there.
I know, that's why I considered it.
It's a good format. I have a pet deck that I like to take to kitchen table tournaments whenever we play Pauper. It's like a 5-color domain zoo deck with tribal flames, wild Nakatl, Curd Ape, Burning Tree, Emissary, all of the cantrip enchantments that like produce mana on your lands. And I like to tinker around with it. It's pretty good. Like you got Lightning Bolt, you got Red Elemental Blast, you got Pyroblast, you got wild Nakatl, Curd Ape, Burning Tree, Emissary. And you do have access to Gurmag Angler in that deck, obviously.
Niksha knows which is my deck of choice for Pauper.
Yeah.
Basically, play against the teachings and over 100 cards and just, you know, win by your opponent not winning.
Yeah. That sounds like a good deck. That does sound like a good deck.
But then
teachings.deck.
We done with the commanders of the week or something like that?
Well, you didn't say anything, but then again, you've been quite busy, haven't you?
Yes, I finally moved into the new place. Frick sakes. We actually, yesterday, went to the old apartment, got everything that we left behind, and that's it. This is the official new apartment, everything is done, and we can finally relax for a second. Sheesh.
Yeah. Congratulations on your new place.
Thank you. By the way, did you know that carrying all the stupid things to the fourth story without any elevators is sucking?
Yeah, trust me. I moved like a year ago from another city. And I had to carry everything, like, well, not to the fourth floor, but like to the third one. No elevator. And I mean, this is a really tall building I live in, so it's like every floor is a bit taller, so it's just like a hassle. And it was like on a Monday night, and people were just going down from their apartments up and down the stairways to like, and there was I like carrying my little fridge with me and stuff to my new apartment. That was just like horrendous.
That's huge.
Yeah, but I've been here for like a year now. I'm enjoying the place a lot. So it was well worth the time and effort.
But yeah, now that I've moved in, we can actually start playing some Magic here. Niksha, you could actually drop by next week or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually bring Conquest with you.
Yep.
And Robert, if you want to tag along, feel free.
Yeah.
We'll make some plans.
Yeah, that does sound cool. I do have a couple of brews I would like to try out on some new opponents. Yeah, that sounds cool. I'll definitely drop by some chance.
But let's return to actual topics at hand. We're going to be talking a lot about Dominaria. Ravnica.
The better plane. The new improved.
No.
Listen,
I do not agree with you.
Listen. I've been into Magic lore since like way back when, like way before the mending and everything. It's what got me into like MTG in the first place. I remember, like, I was a grade schooler, and some kid in my class got like the 7th edition starter pack. Do you remember the one?
Yeah.
With the foil foreign elemental and that ridiculous CD with like a library of all the 7th edition cards and like those two little starter decks.
And I remember the tutorial comic as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah. I actually still have all of that, including that the original foreign elemental. I never unpacked it from its wrapper. It's still like in pristine condition. It's like a little treasure I've been keeping like since 6th grade, I suppose. Anyway, so 7th edition released, and what was there? Mirrodin. Yeah, Mirrodin was like 3 months away. So I've been like just continually looking over that like album and the card collection on the CD. And I was like, I remember seeing Shivan Dragon for the first time. And I was like, gosh, how am I ever going to get a Shivan Dragon? It's like the strongest card in Magic.
That sounds like Alpha.
Yeah, yeah, newbie starts, right? And then they released Mirrodin, and I was like, wow.
What a magical place. Oh no, Ravager.
Oh no. My hopes and dreams. Like, I was playing like 2/2s for 2. And they were playing...
They were playing
4/4s for 0.
No, 1/1 for 2. Ravager is 1/1 for 2.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Officially, he's a 1/1 for 2. But also, unofficially, Mirren Forcer is a 4/4 for 0. And
yeah.
Unofficially, Cranial Plating is a 1000 0 for 2.
No, it's just a life total.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, if you weren't playing like White Veenie back in Mirrodin Standard, you were just like lame.
But yeah, we're going to be talking about Ravnica, about some lore things on Ravnica, and you guys have some crazy fan theories you want to talk about.
Yep.
Well, they're not even that crazy.
Anywho, guys, proceed, because I haven't been following the story for a while, but you guys have, so lead the discussion.
Yeah, Nick, so you want to start?
So, we've been wondering, why does Bolas actually want Ravnica so bad? Because
it's fancy.
Because one of the special things about Ravnica is that it's not special at all.
Exactly. It's most like the only thing Ravnica cares about is Ravnica. Ravnica's been like, Ravnica's like a girl that's been single for so long. All she cares about are her cats and her Instagram.
It's probably because Ravnica was in isolation for 10,000 years.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Ravnica is like a side character from any show that's way overpowered and gets introduced midway through the show and like doesn't think it's special, but nobody can beat it. It's just like, Ravnica has incredible power creep, and the reason why Ravnica is even that powerful is because those 10 guilds been isolated and been feuding for so long, they were their only competition between themselves, and they just pushed each other so sky high, like, each and every single one of them is like planetary level, like we got the Izzet, which could probably take out all of Kalades, which is the plane that's most similar to the Izzet League.
Yeah, but...
And that's just like a tenth of Ravnica.
Yeah, but what is... Is there anything we've seen on Ravnica that Bolas wants to be interested in it so much, except for the fact that a lot of the newer player base is a lot more familiar with Ravnica than Dominaria, so they want to make Ravnica like the central hub plane for the story or something like that.
Yeah. So there was this poll a couple of years back by Wizards R&D. Like, they were ranking the most popular blocks and planes from the past, like, 10 or 15 years, give or take. The most popular one was Innistrad. Mind you, the poll was taken before Shadows over Innistrad came out.
Mm-hmm.
And Innistrad was relatively fresh, but the second most popular plane and block, by far, with only a smidgen between it and Innistrad, was Ravnica. And since the newer player base don't even know about the Mending or anything in the lore, they only heard tales and stories of Dominaria, like most people never played classic World of Warcraft and only hear legends and everything. They're trying to recon Ravnica into like new Dominaria. They're trying to make it the new center of the multiverse.
Yeah, that is probably the reason they're forcing it so much. And I mean, I don't really like it that much because like I said, the special thing about Ravnica was that it wasn't special. It was just its own story.
Yeah, that's what I enjoyed mostly about original Ravnica. It was like isolated, it was pure, it was just great fun. It was like a really good D&D book, like a really good campaign. You had 10 unique guilds. They gave each and every color pairing like a everlasting like identity. For instance, when was the last time someone said white red beatdown instead of Boros burn, or just called I don't know, like green red stompy instead of gruel stompy or something like that.
White dimmer open, control,
dimmer shadow.
I mean, quite actually for the gruel thing.
Mm-hmm.
You often say green red throne and things like that. You don't say gruel throne.
Okay, that might be the exception actually, because yeah, I agree. I never actually heard gruel throne.
Also, you quite often say blue black control. You rarely say dimmer control.
It's because people are lame.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's because
they stopped like naming decks anymore. Not all the decks are called by what they do and, you know, cards in them and their colors.
No more Ghost Dead and things like that.
No more Solar Flare.
Yeah. Solar Flare is like my favorite deck of all times in Standard. Like, no competition. Like, Solar Flare from Ravnica, Time Spiral, Cold Snap, especially when they added Black for Hakom, Stormglad Scourge. That was
and
like
Angel
my favorite deck.
Despair.
Yeah. Death 2, Zombify in the deck. Borgarden Hellkites. Damnations or Rafa Gods, Remands, Mana Leaks, the Signets. Imagine having Signets in Standard. That was like my favorite Standard deck. And my second favorite Standard meta ever. Do you guys remember Fruity Pebbles or the Solution? Those were really good. Those were really, really good deck names.
You mean the 4K solution or?
No, Zui Moshwist's solution. Uh-huh. The one he took to the Pro Tour because he was basically just combating like Red Equins.
You know what the 4K solution is?
I'm not familiar with that.
Basically, that's how the first vintage stacks deck became a thing. And that's where the stacks comes as a name.
Oh. So is it like some sort of shop stacks deck? Like Mishra stacks into Trinisphere and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So it's basically just shops?
The shops has changed a lot. The shops
shops like used to run like... Okay, they cut a lot of shops cards.
You used to run things like all spheres of resistance you could, smokestacks, goblin welders, and time twister and things like that.
I actually enjoyed like I sometimes watch vintage streams because I would have to sell like multiple organs just to afford a vintage deck.
Proxy, you'll be fine.
But like there was this shops variant, Ravager Shops, that played like 4 GTs in vintage.
And I mean, you can do that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. 4 GTs, and sometimes, very rarely though, but sometimes they played even like a sort of Fire and Ice.
Mm-hmm.
And that looked interesting. It looked like an honest deck, but then again, 4 GTs is still pretty good. If you have a Trinisphere online, a GT is really good in Vintage.
Hmm. But anywho, let's go back to Ravnica.
I do.
Okay, so we talked about why Bolas wants Ravnica. So what does Bolas have in his arsenal to attack Ravnica? So he has himself, which is not a small feat. He has the three gods from...
Amonkhet.
He has an army of shiny zombies that are apparently really good at things. He has Deseret, I guess, who is a planar bridge.
Now, kinda. And who also got really drunk once on Kamigawa and got beaten up by old people.
Yeah.
And he has Ralzarek.
But I don't think that Ralzarek really cares about his domination plans. He cares more about the he provides me with stuff plan. Like
sugar daddy.
Yeah, actually we've spoken about this once before, once or twice or maybe 12 times before. But yeah, I'm starting to agree. Ralzarek is like more he's like a living GoFundMe campaign. I have this idea. I will follow anyone who finances me. And that's not even the worst mindset to have.
Yeah, if the listeners played Pokemon Black and White, then it's like Colorless.
Yeah, exactly.
Colorless works for Team Plasma, right?
Yeah,
Team Plasma, but he works for them because they have like limitless funds. So that's really cool when you're a scientist and they don't question you.
But so back to Bolas. Bolas is very powerful, according to Krufix, the god of mysteries from Pharos. He had like this vision, and he listed the three most powerful entities in the multiverse at that time. And that was the entire Phyrexian army. So all 5 Praetors and their entire armies. And that was before the genocide that Elish Norn like started upon the other Praetors. The 3 Eldrazi Titans, so Emrakul, like the space and time and mind-bending monstrosity, Kozilek, the goddamn butcher of truths, and Ulamog, and Bolas himself, the guy who literally, the second after the mending, went to Amonkhet corrupted three gods, just put them away for like a decade. 40 or so years to be precise.
60.
Yeah. And like just soloed seven other gods. No problem.
Yep.
So, on the other hand, Nicol Bolas never had to face all people in Kamigawa, so...
Oh yeah, he did face one guy who eventually hailed from Kamigawa and lost. So Kamigawa, actual strongest planet in the multiverse?
Nice.
Yeah, probably.
Or maybe everyone on Amonkhet is just a giant pushover.
Well, when I look at the block, yeah.
Yeah, they kind of are.
Yeah, they kind of aren't all that
strong. I mean, they also just taken sticks and beaten, you know, invaders.
I mean, the Cycolands are kind of cool, and I like Anointed Procession as much as any other guy, and some of the gods are, like, nifty, but let's be honest.
But yeah, Nicol Bolas has an army that doesn't seem that, you know, grand.
I mean, it is grand. It's like every single dead being on an entire plane, and three actually pretty powerful gods, and like Liliana with her chainmail, and a guy who is basically just the Phyrexian portal in New Clad, and himself, which is pretty powerful.
But what does so he has all of this, but his attack on Ravnica is an actually really bad plan. So let's see, why is that?
So Ravnica has like 10 guilds formed 10,000 years ago. I have to correct myself. It wasn't 10,000 years ago. That's the time when the guild pact was signed. And I have to make a disclaimer here. A year on Ravnica is about 270-something days. So, like, it was 6,000 human years ago, Earth years ago. But those guilds existed, predated the guild pact. And they were in war with each other, and every single guild was founded by a Terran, Niv-Mizzet, Razia, the Obzedat, well, Vuliad in that case, Sazdek, Svolgos, and so on and so forth. And each of those Terrans are, like, incredibly powerful in their own rights.
Yeah, for some reason, the power level of Ravnica is just almost unmatched in the multiverse. Like, the only plane I can think of that's like close to matching it is, well, I would say we just talked about the Kamigawa, because it has like
old people that
has old people and gods that can actually bring forth the apocalypse.
Yeah, that's true.
And the only stronger plane I know of, that we know of, probably, is Aquilor.
Yeah, okay, but Aquilor is Hex. For people who don't really follow magic lore, I suppose every single person that ever touched a magic card at least heard of Urza. Like, the original Planeswalker. Well, not the original Planeswalker, but one of the most prestigious planeswalkers ever to exist, and probably one of the strongest.
You mean the most broken?
Well, yeah, wouldn't be a far shot off to say that. The guy traveled to Aquilor, the original center of the multiverse, and the only reason why he was able to travel there was because he was allowed to. Every single living being on that planet, on that plane, is beyond Urza's power level. And he was a pre-mending planeswalker. Pre-mending planeswalkers were beyond godlike. All that we know from the postman. Like, literally, Nicol Bolas is probably the single most powerful postman in Planeswalker. He's the closest thing to an actual deity, an actual god we have currently in the magic lore. He is nothing but a shadow of his former self. And Wusa was even more powerful than he was back in the day.
And also, you know, on Equilor, according to the plane chase cards, they have missed that stops time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You think that living in a world of scary monsters is bad? Well, just, you know, not waking up for a certain amount of years is... just being stopped in time for several months or
millennia,
whatever, is kind of scary too.
It is. It certainly is.
So...
I would argue, though, that pre-mending Dominaria beats current Ramica, but I wouldn't agree that the current Dominaria is... I think Dominaria is still very powerful. It's still very powerful, but I would argue that Ramica has a beat.
Not a lot of things actually can beat pre-mending Dominaria.
Yeah, not a lot of things, because it was the actual only place where the plot took place.
Plus, it was home to many broken things.
Yeah. People might only know about Lord Windgrace from the very, very mediocre Commander Precon deck, but that guy is one of the Nine Titans, the nine strongest Planeswalkers who fought Yawgmoth back in the day. That was like... The guy's really, really powerful. Really, actually, incredibly powerful. But yeah, let's talk about the guilds of Ramica. What makes them that strong? Nick, so you want to start?
So let's start with my pet favorite guild, the Izzet. So the Izzet have Niv-Mizzet, who is an actual Elder Dragon. By new and old definitions, he's an Elder Dragon. And he's the only living Elder Dragon on Ravnica, as we know. As far as we know.
Plus, he made damn sure that he's the only Elder Dragon.
He made damn sure that he's the only one, yeah.
Niv-Mizzet number one.
And he's kind of like Batman. Niv-Mizzet with prep time, he could beat, like, anything.
Yeah,
just like
I'm
Batman.
Trying to agree. Niv-Mizzet is like very, very powerful in his own rights. Like, base Niv-Mizzet took down... We'll get to the Elder Beings of Ramica later, but he took down two things called Nephilims, which are basically ancient wild gods from the core of the planet.
Yeah,
and
they don't
took
seem
down
like...
A third one.
They don't seem like... They don't seem like threats in cards, but they were actual real threats in the story.
Yes, very
cool. Didn't they kick Niv-Mizzet's ass?
One of them
no,
did.
No, he got tired.
Yeah.
Sure.
His ass didn't get kicked, he got bored and left.
Yeah, exactly. That's the official statement, and we're supposed to take it.
Sure thing, buddy. Sure thing.
Sure thing. But yeah, you're not too far off when you compare him to Batman, because in addition to all those feats, the guy is basically 90% of Ramica's intellect alone. He is a genius. The guy can, like, prepare and conjure anything given enough time.
If he's that percentage, is he a genius or is everybody else just super stupid?
I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah, I just want to say... I just remember there's a guild called the Gruul, so, yeah.
I take offense to it because the Gruul are not stupid, they're just not educated.
Maybe they just got life figured out, because one of my favorite quotes is from Borbirignos himself, the flavor text of Protein Hulk. We all know Protein Hulk, I suppose, EDH players. Anyway. Meat and eggs, tonight we feast.
I was going to say, there is a quote from 40K. One elder is talking about the orcs, and basically says, they're kind of the race that hasn't figured out. Only thing they want to do is just, you know, go and fight. And that's what they do. They don't worry about higher life problems or anything. Just go and do.
Yeah, we shouldn't say they're dumb or primitive or simple. They probably just got life figured out better than we do. They just do the things they enjoy and do them well.
And that's why they all love Barbarigmas, because all he says, the only other orders he gives are smash and we eat. Actually, yeah, it's crush them and we eat.
That's a good lifestyle.
We should not forget we might be dissing Barbarigmas and all his infinite wisdom, but the guy is the largest giant, the largest cyclops on Ramika, and has remained that for a very long time. He has crushed every single being that has tried to challenge him for his leadership spot. Even though, right now, in his old age, he's looking for a successor, which might be Domir Raid later on.
But how can Domir Raid kick anybody's ass?
The girl might be turning a new leaf, like, less smashy-smashy, more finky-finky.
Huh.
I suppose.
Sounds like heresy.
It is. It probably is, but it might not be the worst thing.
Rurik Thar might have a word with Domir Raid about that.
Rurik Thar is officially the only being that has survived a fight one-on-one with Barbarigmas.
He still lost the fight.
Only two beings, I guess?
Well, yeah, only two beings. It's Rurik and Thar.
But anywho, we were talking about the Izzet, weren't we?
Yeah, but we mostly... another thing. Do you remember how on Kaladesh, Rashmi, that is totally not Mishra, a character?
Yeah, exactly.
She tried to make this thing called a teleportation thing, so she could teleport things from one end to the other. And it was like such exotic technology. It's like amazing, incredible. While on Ravnica, it's its main way of transportation.
That's how we move mail and stuff.
You might argue that the Izzet are just glorified plumbers because they made like the ventilation and water systems of Ramika, but these guys invented teleportation, and they use it daily.
I mean, how else are they gonna go move pieces about the plane?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's nothing for them. It's basic. It's like entry level mass for them. It's 2+2. And on Kaladesh, it was like this wowzer, amazing feat.
Oh yeah, let's not forget about time travel.
Oh yeah. Just like casual time travel, like, they don't even care. The Izzet just don't care.
Let me just find a stitch in time. Wait, just give me a... second to find, yeah, the flavor text for Stitch in Time. Quizzle was told by his mentor to make more time for his studies. Quizzle kind of took that literally. So he just made more time.
I mean, that's what you do. And the teacher did tell to him.
So that's how the Izzet operate.
Do you guys remember, like, slow water in Tolaria?
Yeah.
It's nothing today. It was this grand technology that allowed, like, old planeswalkers and wizards to actually, like, extend time to prepare for the oncoming battle with Phyrexia, the climax of the pre-mending storyline. The Izzet just do it casually. That's an amazing feat. They literally have a common card called Chronomancer. It's common there. It's amazing.
So enough about the is it. Let's go on to a very interesting one, the Orzhov.
Oh yeah, probably actually the strongest guild leader. I mean, guild leaders officially. The Obzedath. So the Obzedath actually, well, how should I put it? Like, pre-guild pack, like a decennia ago, there was just one member, and it wasn't the Obzedath. It was just the founder, the original parent of the Orzhov, Buliev, founded that religious cult slash church. It's actually just the mafia, let's be honest. They're just like banks and the mafia. And the guy's just normal human, nothing special about him. However, by means of lawmancy, like, how do they call it in America? Aristomancy? Aristo, whatever?
I don't know.
Advomancy? Like, I know their mages are called advocates. The law mages on Ravnica. But never mind that. Like, they just made, like, a law so they can live after they die. And so, after he was dead, he continued to operate. And over time, four more members joined his ranks. And so became the Obzedath. I mean, a great showcase of their power is the card Merciless Eviction. Nixa, would you like to quote?
So, Merciless Eviction, the quote is, "I once saw the Obzedath moved to action. Since that day, I've been thankful that they're mainly lazy and dead." And that was Aurelia to Gideon Yura.
And we should consider that Aurelia, who is the current guild leader, but not the parent, of the Boros Legion, is the second highest ranking angel in Ravnica history. She was just beneath Razia, who founded the Boros Legion, and who was the first angel, to my knowledge, created on Ravnica, the highest ranking one. And she was scared, like, shatless. Like, she was just awfully scared of a minor showcase of her power.
Yeah, when they just, you know, evicted a whole street.
And it's not a street, it's actually a block of, basically a section.
Yeah, exactly. So, and we, like, the Obzedath literally just, they literally deleted, basically, an entire district. There's something probably as banal as a single guy not paying protection money.
Well, you have to pay a rent and stuff.
It's like they operated similarly to how the Inquisition handles heresy. It's like we have detected possible traces of heresy on this planet. Exterminatus.
That's not how the Inquisition works, and you know it.
Exactly, like that. But, like, the Obzedath, you like to bring this up, Nixa. The Obzedath can just basically rule you away. They can just judge Judy you out of existence, well, off of Ravnica.
Yeah, they're just too lazy to do so.
Well, they got other things on their minds. But if we're going into spoilers and, like, fan fiction, headcanon territory, apparently they're going to be eliminated, or at least one of them, very soon.
Yeah, so we have that Ghostbuster from
2016?
Yeah, from that city of Paliano. What's her? What she called
Kaya. Ghost Assassin.
So we have Kaya on the art, on some promo art, the book, I think.
The Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica. I pre-ordered that just because of, well, there's this, like, art booklet there, and it shows Kaya coming being ushered to Ramika by Taysa.
Oh, so if it's by Taysa, then she'll probably go there, eliminate Taysa's creepy uncle, Carlo. And then Taysa can, like, die and join their ranks.
Hey!
However, the artwork on the booklet showcases Taysa without the Orsop sign. No symbol on her. So she might just try to eliminate the entire guild or just get rid of her uncle and then perhaps leave the guild and live as a commoner? Perhaps. Not sure. But then again, I am actually not sure how Kaya could actually take out any member of the Obsidian. I mean,
they can just, like, forbid her on plane and that's it.
Yeah, they could do that. Then again, no member of the Obsidian actually cares about any other member. They're secretly paranoid and hate each other. The only reason they stick around is because together they can keep the guild together.
Because they like money, and that's it.
Yeah, basically. They're like, I was trying not to say that, but that's exactly
why. It's like, do you like money? Yeah, I like money. Do you like money? Yeah, I like money. Oh my god, we have so much in common. Hey.
So many shekels.
Who doesn't like money?
Well, maybe the girl. They don't seem to care about much except for smash and food.
So yeah, we have the Orzov, and we have, and they are pretty powerful, but we have some other guilds. What Rakdos. Other guild could be, Rakdos. Let's talk about Rakdos a bit.
They're interesting.
They have this particular guild leader, who, as Nyxa once said, likes and basically just sleeps all day in goddamn molten lava. Nyxa, would you like to speak about the actual namesake and parent of the Rakdos guild, Rakdos himself?
So Rakdos himself, he sleeps in lava, but also he has some other particular feats of strength. So the Simic ones designed, and by Simic I mean their crazy scientist, Momir Vig, he designed Experiment Cry. It was designed to grow beyond any kind of control. It was designed to, like, choose its own evolution, and I guess to choose the evolution of Ravnica, well, just, you know, casually. It was a being made of, like, all-consuming acid, but let's just put it out of the way. It couldn't consume the floor because the floor has plot armor and, you know, convenience.
Yeah, true. Then again, I believe a being like Experiment Cry would actually have, like, some foresight and would not, like, destroy the floor beneath it, like, erode it to the point it can no longer move.
Well,
like,
it was
basically, like you said, like, ghosts don't float through the ground.
Yeah, because convenience.
Yeah.
So, it's a giant blob of acid. And anything that it consumed, it would be like, you know, what happens when you put something in acid. It just melts away. And when Rakdos went in melee combat with it, Rakdos was completely consumed by Experiment Cry. He was in Experiment Cry. And
literally inside it.
Literally. And he survived while Experiment Cry did not. And after that, he just went for his, for a power nap. Yeah, that's what he did.
He just went back to molten lava.
He's like, I'm just gonna go heal my wounds in molten lava.
He is the embodiment of what it means to be Rakdos. They're this BDSM freak show circus.
Actually,
burn stuff. And where razor blades everywhere, where they put them.
Actually, Ragdos is the total opposite of his guild. Where the guild is quite active, he likes to take maps.
Yep.
Yeah, but they like to represent his lifestyle. No, actually, you know, he's even more metal than his own guild. They have to actually do stuff to prove people like we can take pain. He just takes naps and molten lava. He doesn't need to prove anything to anyone.
That's the point. They care about things that he doesn't care.
Well, that's why he's the founder, and like one of the reasons Goldus should not attack Ramnica, I mean. Like, I would love to see that. You know what I would love to see? Rakdos versus the Scarab God in melee combat.
Huh.
That's basically like the Juggernaut versus the Hulk.
Or even better, versus the Scorpion God.
I did say the Scorpion
God. You said Scarab God.
Oh, Scarab God, yeah, sorry. Yeah, versus the Scorpion God. That would be one heck of a melee fight.
It would a short one, but it would be one heck of a fight.
Yeah, it would. It would, definitely. Let's move on. We got another guild that's really strong.
Dimir?
Okay, the Dimir are a special case for themselves.
Dimir have just a special character that almost ruined Ravnica, but we'll talk about that later.
A bit later.
What I would like to mention is the Celestnia, which are actually extremely powerful, but they don't seem to be powerful. You know, they just control most of the life on Ravnica, but that's not really that special. What's special is their Quiet Men.
Yeah.
So
the characters most people don't even know about.
I think that Magic Creative doesn't even remember them.
Probably not.
So, the Quiet Men are like the I'm gonna call them the special forces of Ravnica. They're like the protectors, but they don't really discriminate things once they are called. So they're slumbering until they are called and awakened. And when they awake, I mean, when they wake them up and they give them a task to do, they will stop at nothing to perform that task.
Exactly.
Even if it means like obliterating a guild or killing literally anything, they will do their job. Like, they were, they woke them up to get rid of the Nephilim. And
they just, like, blew them up in an instant, in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, they just arrived to a Nephilim, and they just, you know, outright killed it, ended it.
They basically just, like, threw an exile spell on it. It never existed. It didn't even come into play.
So, another thing is that, you know, the rest of the guild was kind of scared of those Quiet Men, because there was a chance that they might, you know, after their task is done, just do some more personal justice and then go to sleep again.
Yeah, that was a possibility. As far as I'm informed, but then again, we don't have a lot of information on the Quiet Men. Except that one deed, they listen to Tristani. They just sleep, and whenever Tristani needs them, I suppose Tristani is a day, it's plural, I suppose. They can actually just give them one single command, and they will do it, whatever it is.
Yep, so she can just give them the command to, you know, Bolas is here, get rid of him. And they just do that. I mean, there's a chance that they don't listen.
You think so?
Yeah. It's like, there is a chance that they just don't wake up. Because I remember reading about it in one of the books. I know that they did not wake for some crisis. They were needed, and they did not wake up. Well, luckily the crisis was averted. because of the, you know, the actual protector of Ravnica, which is Argruskos.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
the Living Guild Pact is unimportant. We're actually talking about the single most powerful entity in the Magic storyline. Not the Elders of whatever the plane is, Equinox, Equilor. I don't even remember because we just mentioned Argruskos. Argruskos. The most powerful being on Ravnica. Ravnica serves to protect the multiverse from Kos.
Yeah, the guild pact. Yes?
I was gonna say, he is the only person in the multiverse who can actually punch the old people who are coming out.
Yep, because he is actually proficient at punching old people.
he made it his life goal to punch old people.
Niksha, can you explain to people what old people did he punch? To give some context to people.
So, let's say I'm going to classify a Sadek as an old people, because he's over 10,000 years old.
As an old
person. Then we have a actual old person who is the Azorius judge, Grand Arbiter Augustin the Fourth.
Actual old person?
Yeah, he is old. And he was completely defenseless when he assaulted and beat the shit out of him.
And you do.
It's Grand Arbiter Augustin the Fourth. I mean, who doesn't want to punch him?
Yeah, he is kind of a slimeball.
First of all, he wasn't being punched, the law was being enforced upon him. It's not Argus' fault he was resisting arrest by being alive.
Yes, yes.
That's a very good point. Last we forget, he straight up murdered Momir Vig in cold blood.
Yeah, so that was such an epic scene to me. So when he was killed, very 40k style, in a random alley, and he died in the mud from fall damage. I mean, from everything, he died to fall damage. He just died in the gutter, like, you know, random hobo. And he was brought as a spirit to serve the Azorius. And one of his abilities was to possess things. So he possessed some simic creature. He went to Momir Vig. He told Momir Vig who he was. And Momir Vig started talking about his completely insane plans of dominating the guilds or something like that. His wacky experiments. And Argruskos just thought, this guy is just too insane to be left alive, and he just killed him. Like, on the spot.
Pardon.
Like, instantly. He just decided, okay, this guy has to die. Dead.
No bullshit, just like, your ideas I do not like. Bang. It was done. Argruskos is like the single most destructive force on Ravnica. Nobody can stop.
Also, he arrested the millennial vampire.
Yeah, so he didn't really punch him. He just he handcuffed him and brought him to justice. Like, a vampire that in his prime, he is unstoppable. The strongest angel on Ravnica, Aurelia. Not Aurelia.
Razia.
She was completely defenseless against him. It was like in One Punch Man, you send Moon and Rider to face the Sea King.
Exactly. He kind of even looks like the Sea King, if you put your mind to it.
Sure. It was like, it wasn't even a match. She was completely powerless. She was like, using her mighty flaming sword of justice, and he just grabbed her by the wrist, and she couldn't move. Like, his strength was unmatched. However,
I think I'll break you now, he said.
However, to be fair, he was at his prime in the, let's call it a subplane of Agrium. And the angels were completely unprepared to go, you know, to Agrium. But still, now Agrus Kos is in Agrium in his spirit form, so he, you know, protects everything from Sadek. He's Sadek ain't doing anything with Agrus Kos around. I mean,
they're playing basically hide and seek.
Yep. I mean, just imagine an Eldrazi titan, like, Emrakul appears on Ravnica, does just, like, throw it. So let's just imagine that Emrakul comes to Ravnica, then it litters, like, just litters on the ground.
Jaywalks.
And then Agrus Kos is like, stop right there, criminal scum.
No. Emrakul litters. And they just hear faint in the background One Punch Man music.
That's a lot of handcuffs he would need for Emrakul, though.
Nope.
No, just one.
Yeah, he just he's just handcuffs, two tentacles, and all of the tentacles are bind.
You know what I miss when we're already on Agrus Kos? And stuff that, like, the magic team Kuxazov forgot. Feather and Pivilege.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to some forgotten characters just in a short while. So we can say that Agrus Kos represents Boros, but he actually represents the entirety of Ravnica.
I was going to say more importantly, he represents the common people.
Yes, he represents the common folk because he was
He's like a Dirty Harry character.
Yeah, he was a regular
Harry.
Not actually. He was actually doing things by the book a lot until, you know, everything went down in the first book.
Yeah, but like after that, he became kind of like an alcoholic. Sort of brutal, like police justice.
He was
nonetheless. He was like the greatest character they ever made, except for maybe Gerard.
Gerard is less cool than Agrus Kos because Agrus Kos actually has much more turmoil than him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but like I still like Gerard. I have a soft spot.
Gerard is cool. Also, his son is cool.
Yeah, I'm so disappointed they killed him off screen and like in general killed him.
Honestly, it's better off this way because they would, you know, screw it up somehow.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
So let's talk a bit about the Golgari because there's one being that's actually really powerful on Ravnica, and that is the parent of the Golgari.
Yeah, Svagdos. The living tomb. So he was a giant necromancer, and literally, as you like to put it, Nixa, turned himself into a fungi to live forever.
So he is one of the few beings on Ravnica that can, like, stare in the eyes of the Gorgon and don't care at all. His powers of necromancy are unmatched, and right now he's just ahead. He's just ahead.
Right now he is the base of operation and the throne room of the Golgari. So he is the guild headquarters. No pun intended.
Other than that, we didn't really explore his character a lot, and I severely doubt that we will actually explore him at all.
There are some fan theories that he's like the brother to Vorbeginus. I'm sorry, I'm butchering his name all the time. But yeah, there's this theory that they were like brothers, because officially, as far as we know, Svartus was also a giant of the same age group and generation, so might be like, you guys know Cho'Gall from Warcraft, right?
Mm-hmm.
He who is also like a warlock there, which is like the bow equivalent to a necromancer, I suppose. And they're like two brothers. One is like based in wisdom, even though they share a body, but these two are like separate. And then again, there's like Rurik and Far in the Gruul itself. They again share a body, but it seems to be like a overlapping theme between the big guys in magic and fantasy in general.
So are there any other notable, are any of the other guilds notable and their feats?
Well, we do have the Azorius, which used to be like the lawmakers, but now are more like police officers. And their parent, Azor.
Yeah, Azor is kind of a plant now and on another plane, so...
Yeah, but still, we have to consider he used to be the right hand of a more powerful planeswalker named Ugin. And he literally created the guild pack 10,000 years ago and well, left.
And he helped to make the Immortal Sun.
Yeah, which is a pretty decent card in EDH. And in general, I suppose. I've seen it in stacks builds sometimes. In Vintage, I'm not even kidding. It used to be like a piece. But in shops. But except for that, nothing really special. They had the old guy.
Yeah, the old guy. Yeah, he could have made a Bolas' spells cost one more.
But then punches happen.
Yeah, but punches happen. They have Hesperia, which is bad, and then got worse. Where's the space?
Well, she's better now. I mean, she's dead.
Yeah, exactly. Because, well, even sphinxes can't look into a Gorgon's eye. I suppose we got Lavinia, who is like...
She's cool.
Yeah, she is a cool character. I do like her, actually. The little things we know about her. But, like, she's basically just a glorified, like...
Secretary.
You mean the actual guild pack who's doing stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Jace for sure as hell isn't.
And Jace is around, he's just a choir boy. He's just going around with his...
Jace is basically a glassful dad who basically plays ball with you like once in 2 years and you're happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time your mommy is doing all the work.
Yeah. Exactly. Did we skip over any guild?
Dimir?
Well, oh yeah, well we did say that they had like one of the most powerful beings on the entire plane.
And I wouldn't argue that Lazav isn't a powerful being in his own right. He managed to take control of the guild quite fast. And last time we had this talk, because I have to mention, this is a re-recording because we had poor audio last time. I did hear a theory that I mentioned last time that either Suzdik might be Lazav or Lazav might have been Suzdik all the time because he's a shapeshifter.
Ooh. But apparently what we learned is that Lazav is actually kind of a good guy.
Yeah, the Dimir are like the heroes of the storyline right now.
Yeah, they're probably going to be the heroes because, you know, you can spy, you can like manipulate a plane all you want, but when there's no plane to manipulate, you kind of, you know, lose sense of your existence, so...
It's like when you get bullied in school, and then a new bully shows up and bullies you, and then your bully beats the other bully so he can continue bullying you.
Yes.
I never got bullied in school, by the way. That's...
I got hella bullied, so yeah.
Anyway, oh yeah, we should also probably mention, since we already mentioned the Quietman in Selesnya, we should probably mention the primordial beings of Ranika. We actually did mention them, but never took the time to actually explain what they are. The Nephilim. The ancient primordial gods of the plane.
Aren't they actually from another plane, but they got stuck here?
I think it's kind of uncertain into what's where they're from. They say that they have been on Ravnica since time immemorial, and they just woke up now, and that they're beings of like pure something. So that when they're killed, they just get, you know, reborn at some point.
They're like the cooler versions of Child of Alara.
Ha! Huh.
Mm-hmm.
And not to be underestimated, these guys are very, very powerful. Even though, as you said, the cards don't really represent them very well. And Mark Rosewater did say if R&D were to remake them, they would be better cards and definitely legendary. They did get beaten pretty handy, but they got beaten by Niv-Mizzet. We already like told everyone how powerful that dragon actually is. The only reason he's not an Elder Dragon on cards is because the title is too long with the legendary text and everything. And Rakdos, who sleeps in molten lava, might I remind you.
Oh yeah, one of the reasons they actually got super powered is their ability to absorb things. The thing is, they actually feasted on the corpses of the Elder Dragons.
Oh so yeah, and some of the remaining eggs, right?
Yeah. During that construction work on the... Like, they said it was a steam power plant or something like that, but it was actually an incubator for the eggs.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
I mean, the dragons did get freed and brutally murdered shortly after being freed. But the Nephilim did feast on the corpses of those dragons, and their power level just went sky high. And like, they were growing, so they were like a Katamari. They would just eat things and get bigger. So eventually they would like consume everything on Ravnica if left unchecked.
Actually, I mentioned it once, but I don't even believe the representation we got in the cards that those are like fully grown Nephilim. They always seem kind of unfinished. Like they were just like in a rookie middle phase, you know, like you got your Charmander, and then you got, like, your Charmeleon. But, like, they never got that skip to Charizard or, like, a Mega Evolution.
Mm-hmm.
But they were still growing, just going back into their original forms.
So, talking about neglected characters, like the Nephilim, let's hope we'll get some Nephilim action in at least the third part of the set. You mentioned Pivlich and Feather. So
yes.
Pivlich is everyone's, well, at least whoever read the stories, he's everyone's favorite barkeeper.
I suppose businessman, barkeeper, barista, shop owner, extraordinary.
He's an imp of many talents.
Yes.
And for some reason, his businesses would always get in the center of attention. For whenever something catastrophical was appearing, it somehow revolved near Pivlich.
Well, heavy publicity is good publicity, I suppose.
Oh, definitely.
And then there's Feather. Argus Costas. Well, right-hand rookie police cop angel assistant.
Best friend.
Sorta.
No,
but yeah.
Oh, they were definitely friends.
But, like, what I would really love, I would really, really, since Feather is obviously classic Boros, red-white, right?
Yeah.
Pivlich is most likely like a Orzo color.
No, he legitimately is part of the Orzo.
Yeah, he was part of the Orzo, so he is Orzo.
he would be like white black. I would love for like a commander product to come out with another Mardu commander. Like, I don't know. Doesn't even matter who the Mardu commander would be. And as the extra legendaries, there should be Pivilege and Feather as partner commanders.
That would be awesome.
I would legitimately enjoy that. I don't even care what they would do. I would build a partner commander deck just around those two. Like, buddy cop theme. I would just like slam in like Pivilege, Feather, Argus Koss. I would play Vedalken Shackles just because they're shackles in my islandless Mardu deck. Stuff like that. Leonin Bola, that would be auto included in deck.
And of course, Authority of the Council.
Obviously. And another character, Ill Forgotten, the spider who swore vengeance upon the Obzedat.
Oh yeah, that guy.
Except, would you like to take it away?
So, during the events of the second book, as Tesa was approaching one of their central banks or something,
Viscopa.
She was approaching Viscopa. She was passing under a spider. She was like casually talking to the spider, like, "Hi there, Mr. Spider Thing. How's your day?" He was like, "It's fine. I'm still like bound to serve the Obzedat for the next 2,376 days or something like that." He was very precise in that number. He even mentioned years and hours of service. And he said that once my duty is complete, I will consume you and your whole guild.
Yeah. What a nice guy.
He really doesn't like the Obzedat.
So I would imagine that if the Obzedat got killed, that would release him of his contract. I mean, his obligations, let's say.
Exactly.
So what would he start doing? Because he has a lot of vengeance built up in him.
He would I have this theory. The spider, the Jund spider from the pre-con commander deck with Lord Windgrace, the War Weaver, that's him in his final full form. The worst Jund commander of them all.
Oh, wow. No, I refuse. I refuse to believe that a spider that legitimately sounds like he will actually end an entire guild, that he is the... that he's just a spider.
He might be the one to end Bolas.
He just might. It's like...
He sounds so serious, so confident that he could actually get rid of the Obzedat. Mm-hmm. Might I remind you, the same Obzedat that's on Merciless Eviction.
Yeah, I believe him. My money's on the spider.
Yeah, he you know what he can do? He has 8 legs. He can build 8 Jites.
Oh.
That's cool. Kamigawa 2.0 confirmed on Ramika.
Oh, I want Kamigawa.
Yeah, like old people, the spider, and Tetsuko Umezawa and her Jite versus Bolas. I would watch that fight. It's better than any fight with Conor McGregor.
I mean, sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. The last fight with Conor McGregor had a really fun ending.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true.
But do we have anything else to talk about?
Do you have any other characters? I don't think so.
I think we went to Veronica pretty well.
Yeah.
I suppose. So I don't believe there's anything worth mentioning that we skipped.
So, in conclusion, we can say that the power of Ravnica is just out of this world, and if, you know, the R&D creative did their homework, they would see that, you know, having just shiny zombies, some so-called gods, and, I don't know, robots, I guess?
I suppose we got, like, the villain from Iron Man 2.
That those things aren't really enough to get, you know, take over Ravnica. Because I'm sure that Ravnica has some more things in store for these kind of invasions.
Well, they are trying to, like, divide the guilds. Like, five guilds are going to protect Ravnica, and five of them are, like, trying to make
preserve Ravnica?
With Bolas, I suppose. But, yeah, that's for another time, but
yeah.
If it was, like, just Bolas' forces versus Ravnica, he loses big, big time.
I mean, he wasn't even in Ravnica, like, ever.
Yeah, let's
not forget one more character that we have another fan theory about. He's called Shenko. Not Krenko. We have Shenko. Because it's the... remember when Gideon was legitimately hurt on Kaladesh? On the Egypt plane.
Amonkhet. Yeah?
Well, guess what? When he was on Ravnica, he once... actually, I think it was Krenko he was bringing.
It was
Krenko. And he was bringing Krenko to justice, and then out of nowhere, Krenko just pulled a shiv from his pocket and stabbed Gideon. Like, he stabbed him.
I mean, did you see what Krenko can do in EDH?
He stabbed an invincible planeswalker. Let's just, you know, think about that. And so, henceforth, he was known as Shenko. And he's probably secretly one of the most powerful beings on Ravnica.
He is a boss.
He just doesn't realize it yet. His destiny is to shank Bolas.
He's going to take the Black Blade Reforged. Obviously.
Obviously.
Oh no. No, he's just going to make a toothpick into Shiv and just stab Bolas with it.
Just like prison him, like, to death.
Yep.
Just like cellmate. Like.
Well, if Iris Kos arrests Bolas and he ends up in a prison with Krenko.
What does that mouth do, boy? Yeah.
Oh, man.
Bolas would be the bottom, definitely.
So, we finish with the show?
I suppose so. Like, conclusion. Bolas loses. Ravnica wins.
Hey! Any final words, Nixon?
We'll see what the official story looks like. I imagine it going, like, completely... standardly, like, Bolas comes, Bolas wins, and in the third part, the Gatewatch appears, power of friendship, blah blah blah. Liliana turns against Bolas, Bolas sees that, he snaps his fingers, Liliana dies because she is still a human and very mortal, and she's like a couple of hundred years past her expiration date. And she, like, sacrifices herself for her so-called friends. We never hear anything about the Raven Man ever again, because apparently they forgot about
what
him.
What to do with that character.
So let's just kill Liliana, and then, you know, they win because, I don't know, Jace unlocks the true power of the Guild Pack and unleashes his Hadouken Kaioken times 20 on him.
Anywho.
He basically just tells Krenko to shank him.
Yeah. Anywho, this has been episode 81, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're correct.
This has been the Elder Dragon Daryl podcast. This has been Nixha.
This has been Igor, I guess.
And this has been Robert, I suppose.
I suppose your name is Robert. Well, if it's not, it is now.
No, that's good, horrible meme.
Good job, Robert.
I will hurt you next time I see you in person. I will literally shank you. with a shank made of rusted up Cranko cards.
I'd like to see you try. Okay, and...
And as always, the Emperor protects.
And apparently so does Agruskos.
Yes, he does.